Al-Qaeda was better at planning the attacks and keeping their plans secret than the United States government was in uncovering them.
So what you're seeing today is a continuation of the mechanisms that came from that era of colonization some 100 years ago.
Of course, the resistance will continue, sometimes much more stronger, because the resistance groups want to prove that they have nothing to do with Saddam or Rodai and Hussein.
The violence is to have people stopped at checkpoints, prevented from being able to move. That is an assault on human beings.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Thursday, July 24th, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. The best chance to unravel the September 11th plot was lost because intelligence agencies failed to let the San Diego FBI office know that two men were suspected terrorists and would later turn out to be among the hijackers. That's according to the final report released today of a congressional inquiry into the attacks. The report also said that in May 2001, the suspected mastermind of the attacks, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, was identified in an intelligence report as seeking recruits to travel to the U.S. for terrorist activities. Those individuals would be expected to make contact with colleagues already there, according to the report. The House and Senate Select Intelligence Committees released a 900-page report today detailing the results of its 10-month investigation into the security lapses surrounding September 11th. Speaking at a bipartisan congressional news conference this afternoon, Democratic Representative Bob Graham of Florida said that the commission's report was extensive in its scope and contained 19 recommendations, but all boiled down to a single theme.
The attacks of September the 11th could have been prevented if the right combination of skill, cooperation, creativity, and some good luck had been brought to the task. For example, there is an abundance of important information in this report that suggests institutional resistance to making the counterterrorism efforts necessary to have it be a high priority for the nation prior to September 11. That resistance ranged from a lack of information sharing among key agencies to proposed budget cuts at the Department of Justice for FBI's counterterrorism programs. Simply put, those problems contributed to the government's inability to mount a successful initiative against Al-Qaeda prior to September 11. Another example, a previously classified finding number 14, states that senior military officials were reluctant to use military assets to conduct offensive counterterrorism efforts in Afghanistan or to support or participate in CIA operations directed against Al-Qaeda prior to September the 11th. At least in part, this reluctance was driven by the military's view that the intelligence community was unable to provide the actionable intelligence necessary to support military operations. The report confirms that between 1999 and 2001, U.S. naval ships and submarines armed with cruise missiles were positioned in the North Arabian Sea to attack Osama bin Laden. But we did not get spies close enough to him to tell us where he would be on any given day. If people want to place blame, there's plenty of blame to go around.
Congressman Bob Graham of Florida. Democratic Representative Nancy Pelosi of California echoed Graham's concerns, saying that the problem was that Al-Qaeda was better at planning attacks and keeping them secret than the U.S. was at uncovering them. She also said that the administration had set up a series of bureaucratic roadblocks, which made her committee's work especially difficult and made a full independent analysis nearly impossible.
As good as the joint inquiry and the reports are, they are not as complete as they could be. We repeatedly encountered obstacles in getting necessary information from the administration. For example, and I think this is very important, we were never able to get much of the material we requested from the National Security Council, specifically the records of the Counterterrorism Working Group and written exchanges between the National Security Council and the intelligence community on counterterrorism proposals. The nation was not well served by the administration's failure to provide this critical information to the committees.
Pelosi is calling for a full independent investigation into the attacks on September 11th and asked the Bush administration to cooperate fully. In the northern Iraqi town of Mosul yesterday, four men were killed by U.S. forces. Two have been identified as the sons of Saddam Hussein. The military released graphic after-death photographs today in an effort to prove to Iraqis that Saddam Hussein's feared sons, Uday and Qusay, were killed in the fierce gun battle this week. Two U.S. military photos showed the first man identified as Qusay with bruises and blood spots around his eyes. That face was far more intact than the other, identified as Uday. The mouth was open and the teeth showing. The Arab news service Al Jazeera and Arab television network came under fire from Western government officials, as well as segments of the media, for showing pictures of U.S. soldiers that had been killed and captured during the invasion of Iraq. Ibrahim Hilal, the editor-in-chief of Al Jazeera, spoke with Peace Watch today about the deaths of Saddam's sons and what that may mean for the resistance against U.S. occupation.
Actually, I can see in the release of these pictures a solution for the dilemma which the American forces in Iraq were in after the claim that they have killed Uday and Qusay. So they had to show these pictures to get out from the dilemma that people in the Arab world and specifically in Iraq don't believe them. I can see in this dilemma, the same dilemma which Al Jazeera was in during the war in Iraq, when we had pictures of the American and British soldiers killed and captured during the war, without showing the faces of the bodies of the American soldiers. Everybody doubted Al Jazeera, everybody doubted the fact that there are American soldiers killed in Iraq. So sometimes editorial reasons are more important than the human reasons. So we had to show these pictures of American soldiers, and the American administration had to show the pictures of Uday and Qusay. But, you know, during any war, there are victims from both sides, and it is not fair to say that the victims are in the Iraqi side only. There are victims in the American side, and that's why we believed in showing pictures of American soldiers, because at the end of the day, any soldiers, any normal soldier, is a victim in the war, because we all agree that the war is a bad solution to any crisis, and a soldier being killed in a war is a victim as well. So we had to show that there are victims from the American side as well. We have pictures of victims from the Iraqi side.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said that you could appreciate the dilemma that the U.S. administration is in, that they had to back up their claim by showing these photos. Does this, in your opinion, provide unrefutable proof that these individuals that were killed and that are being shown, whose bodies are being shown, are in fact Uday and Qusay?
At least this is the only solution they have. At least this is the only proof they have in their hands. So they had to back their claim by showing the pictures. Of course, there are many, more than one proof, because of the neighbors of the house who was attacked by American troops in Mosul as well. The eyewitnesses said that Uday and Qusay were in that house. And it is not needed to show these pictures. Some Iraqi analysts say that these pictures were shown to destroy the will of the Iraqi people and to destroy the resistance belong to Saddam, although the resistance belong to Saddam is minor compared to the overall Iraqi resistance. So showing the picture is not only because of supporting the claim that they were killed. So because if the American administration insisted that they were killed without showing the pictures, it would be, in my opinion, it would be enough. It didn't showing the pictures didn't add a lot to the claim because many in Iraq believed that they were killed without showing the pictures.
Mm, and has your reporting or your news organization is comfortable with the fact that these are, in fact, the sons of Saddam Hussein?
Yeah, we brought one of the Iraqi analysts here in the studio of Al Jazeera in Qatar, and he identified the pictures of the two bodies as Uday and Qusay. Why he was quite sure that they are Uday and Qusay in the pictures.
Mm. Now, it appears that part of the reason that the U.S. wanted to release these photos was an attempt to prove to Iraqis that the last remains of Saddam Hussein's Ba'ath regime had been destroyed. Some observers say that the hope is that such evidence will silence the remaining supporters of the Ba'ath regime, who the U.S. has blamed for ongoing attacks against military personnel, U.S. And British military personnel. How much of an impact do you think these photos will have? And do you think Iraqis will believe that they're authentic?
Iraqis will believe that they are authentic, and Iraqis believed before showing the pictures that Uday and Qusay were killed. But I want to clarify that the resistance, especially in Anbar, in Ramadi and Fallujah, these resistance groups don't really belong to Saddam and Uday and Qusay, because they were in hunt, actually, Uday and Qusay, and they were not able to organize the resistance and to support the Iraqi resistance. I don't want to say that the American officials want to focus on Saddam as a leader of the resistance just to show that Iraqi people cannot resist themselves. Actually, it is not true, because Iraqi people are really resisting the American and British occupation themselves. They don't need Saddam or Uday and Qusay to tell them what to do, because it's natural in their behavior, it's natural in the tribal culture in the western of Baghdad to resist any kind of occupation. This is the norm of the people there, and especially in the western area of Iraq, where the resistance is very strong.
Mm-hmm. So is it your opinion, based on the research and the coverage of your media organization, that this resistance will continue despite the fact that Qusay and Uday were killed?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. The resistance will continue, sometimes much more stronger, because the resistance groups want to prove that they have nothing to do with Saddam or Uday and Qusay. Actually, it is not morale for them. It is a way to demoralizing them to say that they are organized by Uday and Saddam, because they don't like the Iraqi regime as they don't like the American occupation.
Mm. Now, what did your organization find or uncover with regard to the manner in which Uday and Qusay were actually killed? Did you report that there was an exchange of gunfire, or how did you have reporters there at the time?
Yeah, we were actually the first organization in the world to announce that Uday and Qusay, the sons of Saddam, are in that house, was attacked in Mosul. Actually, our reporter was there in just outside the house, and he listened to eyewitnesses saying that Uday and Qusay are in the house. I can say that around 11 a.m. GMT on Tuesday, we announced that Uday and Qusay were in the house and they might be killed.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any information about who it was that tipped off the U.S. military?
No, we don't have clear information about that, but most of the eyewitnesses say that one of the neighbors of the owner of the house, not the owner of the house himself.
But the owner of the house was not there at the time of the attack.
He was arrested immediately after the attack, actually.
But he was not there at the time of the attack.
Maybe it was done deliberately by the American soldiers not to attack the house while normal people are inside, because if something like that happened, it would infuriate the anger of the people in Mosul, because if they have killed the owner of the house during the attack, it would be a disaster for them. It's a tribal area. People around the house will defend them, their neighbor, and they will be angry because that guy, even if he harbored Uday and Qusay, he is not a criminal.
No?
He is not a criminal in their way of thinking, in the tribal way of thinking. Mm-hmm. He is not a criminal.
Mm. That's interesting. What do they think about the U.S. attack on Uday and Qusay? Some in this country, a few, have raised the question that this was actually an assassination on the part of the U.S. government.
Yes, most of the Iraqis, even who are happy because of getting rid of Uday and Qusay, most of the Iraqis believe that Uday and Qusay were behaving wrongly during their father's era. But they don't like the way of the killing because they don't consider this way a legal way. Without having a tribunal, without having a court to judge whether Uday and Qusay are really criminal, what exactly they have done during their father era, it is not legal in the Iraqi eyes to kill them like that, especially when you see the fact that the attack happened by extremely huge amount of force was used to attack the house.
Mm. Were there innocent Iraqis killed during that attack?
I think one of the Iraqis celebrating outside the attack was killed during a demonstration organized immediately after the attack. It was actually a very sad accident in the eyes of Mosul people, because some of the young people celebrated the attack immediately after it happened, and the American soldiers fired at the demonstration and killed one person.
They celebrated by shooting into the air?
No, nothing like that.
Oh,
nothing like that. Our reporter was there, and he has seen the demonstration. It was very, very limited and very few of young people celebrating outside the house, and because of it was a security closed area, they just shoot at the demonstration, and one of the demonstrators was killed.
Any final thoughts on your part, Mr. Hilal?
Just the most important point I want to clarify, that the resistance in Iraq is not organized by Saddam and his sons. Maybe some people of Saddam's militia of Uday or the ex-military staff of Qusay are resisting the American soldiers, but it is not true that most of the resistance groups are faithful and loyal to Saddam. Maybe they don't like the way of killing Saddam's sons, but they don't believe in Saddam's sons, they don't believe in Saddam anymore, and they want to get rid of this reputation. They want to say that the Iraqi people can resist American occupation without having Saddam in there as a leader.
Has your reportage discovered anything about the whereabouts of Saddam Hussein? Do you believe that Saddam Hussein is still alive and somewhere in the country?
Yes, we believe that he's still alive and in the country, but from day one of the collapse of Baghdad, he left the area of his family, and I think he's living alone among some of his supporters. He is very rich. He has got a lot of money, cash, dollars with him. This is the only way he can survive, by distributing money, by giving money to loyals around him.
And what have you heard about these rewards, these bounties that the U.S. had put on the heads of Uday and Qusay, $15 million, up to $15 million
each? The history of Iraqi people don't accept this way of rewards, actually, because in the very recent history of Iraq during the revolution of 1958, one of the very hated persons was arrested after some of the normal Iraqis gave the information about him, and has got a lot of money because of that. And this person specifically fled Iraq because nobody wanted to deal with him because of his behavior. It is shameful in the Iraqi behaviors to do something like that, even if it is $15 million. This is from the Iraqi people I know in Doha and in Iraq. They cannot deal with a person did something like that.
Mm. So whomever tipped off the U.S. Government, if they received the reward money, they'd more than likely leave Iraq.
Yeah, of course, they will leave Iraq, and even their family will leave Iraq because they cannot live in a country while people around them cannot deal with them.
Ibrahim Hilal, editor-in-chief of Al Jazeera Television Network in Doha, Qatar. Pressure continues to mount against the Bush administration over whether the president intentionally misled Congress and the American people about the threat posed by Iraq's alleged weapons of mass destruction. Last week on Peace Watch, we spoke with Zach Exley of the activist website MoveOn.org, which has launched a nationwide print and television ad campaign calling Bush the misleader and demanding a congressional investigation. Peace Watch producer Scott Gurian spoke earlier this week with Peter Fehrenbach, the executive director of California Peace Action. Fehrenbach's group has launched a similar ad campaign, which poses the question, who are we arming now?
Well, the ad campaign features kind of as the central graphic this now infamous picture of Donald Rumsfeld shaking hands with Saddam Hussein. And at the occasion that the picture was taken, Rumsfeld had been sent to Baghdad as an envoy from the Reagan administration for the purpose of establishing U.S. support for Iraq. And the headline of the ad says, "Who are we arming now?" And one of the purposes of running this ad campaign is really to draw attention to the sharp increases in military aid to human rights abusing governments around the world and to build support for one of the three planks in our campaign for a new American foreign policy.
What exactly does the ad say?
Well, the ad basically points out that, you know, when Donald Rumsfeld was sent on that mission, he was provided intelligence in advance that said Iraq was using chemical weapons, quote, almost daily, and yet nonetheless they made the decision that supporting him was a worthwhile thing to do. And it basically makes the case that, you know, we provided military aid to Manuel Noriega and then ultimately invaded in Panama. We provided military aid to the Mujahideen fighting against the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, and that got us Osama bin Laden. And, you know, ultimately it makes the case that policymakers need to be held accountable for this pattern of repeatedly arming human rights abusing governments and dictatorships only to then subsequently send American troops into conflict to pay the price for their policy failures.
The one thing that really struck me looking at this ad, you write that the war in Iraq marked the seventh consecutive time that American troops have been sent into combat against a regime the U.S. had previously backed. That's a pretty amazing figure that you came up with. Could you remind our listeners of what the other six times were in recent history?
Well, both times. Iraq counts twice, but Afghanistan, Yugoslavia, Panama, Somalia, and Haiti are all instances where American troops faced U.S.-made weaponry or weapons technology.
Well, what are your goals in launching this campaign, and what do you ultimately hope to accomplish?
The ad campaign, and I should say, is running, our biggest ad buy was throughout the D.C. metro, but they're running throughout the Chicago L and the San Francisco BART as well, and we ran full-page ads in the New York Times and the Los Angeles Times, and we should be reaching a combined total of about 28 million people. And this is the first in a series of ads. The next one, which we're working on right now, will challenge the Bush administration's nuclear weapons policy, where essentially they're putting forth a do-as-we-say, not-as-we-do approach, where, you know, ostensibly we invaded Iraq to go after weapons of mass destruction. At the same time, they propose to build more. And then the third part in the ad campaign will address basically the unilateralism of the administration. Running these ads at this time, our goal, frankly, is to stir up some debate. It looks as though that's gone fairly well. We were denounced last week by the Republican National Committee. We were denounced on the Hannity and Combs show and a number of other conservative talk shows. So we seem to be stirring it up, which was exactly our purpose. But we want really to open up a larger debate, and not simply to, you know, challenge Donald Rumsfeld or the Bush administration, but to challenge the Democratic candidates as well. That, you know, we need a real debate on where this country is going and its relationship to the rest of the world. And, you know, given just in the instance of arms sales, the profound policy failures of the last 20 years, it's time really to talk about some major changes. And if the United States got out of the business of arming human rights abusing governments and dictatorships, that would include quite a list of people, certainly, you know, addressing issues like the Philippines or Colombia or Indonesia, et cetera. The list goes on.
Aside from educating people and building political pressure, are there any specific actions you're recommending that people take?
Well, we're pursuing on a nationwide level a campaign for a new American foreign policy, and that has kind of an on-the-ground element where, particularly here in California, we have organizers meeting with all manner of organizations, in particular focusing on Latino and African-American political organizations, on organizations that work particularly on women's issues and labor issues. And our goal is to have all of those organizations endorse a three-point platform for a new American foreign policy. The first says that we should stop arming human rights abusing governments. The second says that we should not produce any new nuclear weapons and, in fact, lead the world in a campaign to get rid of nuclear weapons, including our own. And the third puts forth some particular suggestions about what should be happening in terms of international cooperation. And so the strategy with the organizers is to demonstrate to politicians that, you know, sometimes people say, well, you know, they seem to kind of marginalize the peace movement. And what we want to demonstrate is, you know, it's not just the, you know, immediate peace movement that thinks we need to go in a different direction as a country. It's a much broader segment of the American public. We're, you know, really focusing this on this at this particular point while some of the electoral debate is shaping up, particularly here in California. We want to make it clear to the Democratic candidates that, you know, you're not going to win the Democratic nomination without winning California. And out here in California, you know, as was the case, obviously, around the world, you know, literally millions of people took to the streets and wrote letters, you know, and protested in the lead-up to the invasion of Iraq. And, you know, you better have a challenge to this administration's foreign policy if you're going to campaign in California, is one of the messages of this.
Another thing that struck me is, in your ad, you say that U.S. troops die for the failures of policymakers, which is a pretty powerful statement. Sort of reminds me of John McCutcheon's song about the World War I. Christmas Eve truce between German and American soldiers, where he sings that the ones who call the shots won't be among the dead and lame. With this statement, it sounds like you're trying to reach people who are traditionally supportive of U.S. foreign policy in Iraq and elsewhere.
To be honest, we don't really have any particular issue with the people in the, you know, in the armed forces. The television news crew out here in the Bay Area went out and interviewed people on the BART system last week about the ad campaign, and one of the first people they talked to was a veteran, Korean War veteran. He was wearing his, you know, Korean War veteran cap, USS Kitty Hawk, and, you know, he completely agreed with the ad. He said it's outrageous that these people do this over and over again, and that young men and women in uniform are sent to get shot at by American weapons because of ill-conceived policy in the first place. And, you know, I personally have essentially challenged a member of Congress on these points on a military base and found that the people in the audience were 100% with me. And I think it's very important for the peace movement to make it clear that, you know, our issue is not with the men and women in uniform. Our issue is with, you know, the folks who are making the decisions to arm countries with truly outrageous records. And, I mean, obviously supporting Saddam Hussein when we knew in advance that he was using chemical weapons almost daily is, you know, profoundly offensive. But that wasn't a decision made by the Pentagon. That was a decision made by political leaders in the Reagan White House.
You said you were denounced by several Republicans and conservative talk show hosts. What kind of response have you gotten from the general public? Have people contacted your organization after seeing this ad?
The more common response has been very favorable from various commuters in Chicago and in D.C. saying, you know, I couldn't believe it when I got on the train and I saw this. This was great. And we've gotten quite a few emails of this nature. You know, we got a smattering of hate mail, but that's to be expected. And I think, you know, one thing is when you put the picture out there, you know, some people have said, well, you're just trying to smear Donald Rumsfeld. But, you know, the point of the graphic is that, you know, a picture is worth a thousand words, and we shouldn't be supporting people like this. You know, as we speak today, you know, we're substantially increasing military aid to a country like Uzbekistan, which has, you know, literally thousands of political prisoners, according to Amnesty or to Human Rights Watch. And that basic bottom line offends the great majority of Americans. And, you know, I think kind of putting it out there is unsettling for folks, this picture that way, because they think, wow, you know, we really have gotten into bed with some pretty awful people. And, you know, I think that hits a very broad and wide chord amongst the American public.
Thank you very much. Any final thoughts you wanted to add?
Thank you very much for having me, and keep your eyes peeled for the ads, which are in production right now, challenging the administration's nuclear weapons policy. And again, you know, it's outrageous that they're seeking to resume nuclear testing at the Nevada nuclear test site, seeking to build new nuclear weapons and design new, quote, mini nukes. And the public really needs to kind of look at the totality of Bush foreign policy and demand that the people who are running for president and for elected office right now stand up and challenge that.
Peter Fehrenbach, executive director of California Peace Action, which has launched an ad campaign that asks, who are we arming now? You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. We'll be back in a moment.